Natural disasters strike without warning, and when they do, the consequences could be disastrous for civilians as well as the local economy if they are not prepared for it. Earthquakes in particular are extremely disastrous as they can strike without warning. And these earthquakes can be catastrophic events for cities, such as the case with Turkey, which experienced a significant loss of life and infrastructure damage as the buildings were not built to modern code that can withstand seismic activity. I'm Christy Ai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be examining the cost of earthquakes and what it would take for an economy to rebuild and recover. On February 6th, Turkey experienced earthquakes of 7.8 and 7.5 magnitudes, followed by more than 7,500 aftershocks and two additional earthquakes. This is the largest such disaster to have hit the country in over 80 years. The regions affected have some of the highest poverty rates in Turkey and also host more than 1.7 million Syrian refugees. The two earthquakes in February cost an estimated $34.2 billion in direct physical damage in Turkey, which is the equivalent of 4% of the country's 2021 GDP. Recovery and reconstruction costs will be much larger, potentially twice as large. GDP losses associated with economic disruptions, such as loss of businesses, productivity, tourism, etc., will also add to the cost of earthquakes. And the total estimate for the cost of the earthquake has been around $84 billion, which is now 10% of Turkey's GDP. $70 billion is from damages to homes and buildings, $10 billion is from the loss of national income, and $3 billion from the loss of working days. Valuing human life also becomes a tricky situation as it is related to a person's earnings. These are lower in developing countries like Turkey, so translating lives into dollars becomes quite problematic in that context. However, this does not include human misery, which is the number of people who lost family and is left without power or clean water. However, these estimates also don't take into account the multiplier effect that reverberate through the supply chains. For example, Turkey is a big supplier of stone, glass, and textiles. The earthquake has now disrupted the entire supply chain, affecting many retailers like Hugo Boss, H&M, and many more as its seaborne trading hubs remain crippled. The second multiplier pertains to how quickly and efficiently businesses get back on their feet after a disaster and the time lost before the cities can begin operating again. The third has to do with what happens to the people who live in disaster zones. If they flee or evacuate, the local economy loses its labor base, and the demand for goods and services in the area also declines. This is also the case in Turkey when people are afraid to return to work in buildings they believe to be vulnerable to collapse. An estimated 1.25 million people have been rendered temporarily homeless due to building collapses, and over 50,000 people died as a result of the earthquake, and over 500,000 people have been evacuated from the disaster area. 173,000 buildings have so far been recorded as collapsed or severely damaged, including some of the newest apartment blocks. This has now led to urgent questions about building safety standards. Modern construction techniques should mean that buildings can withstand earthquakes. However, the standards have been poorly enforced in Turkey. In Turkey, the government has provided periodic construction amnesties, which are effectively legal exemptions for payment of a fee for structures to be built without the required safety certificates. Up to 75,000 buildings across the affected earthquake zones in southern Turkey have been given these construction amnesties. And even though $84 billion is a hefty estimate, many suspect that the governments are underestimating costs in order to avoid further embarrassment when a government or business policy may be at fault for its lax construction policies. So now let's bring in Dipanj Katharia, principal at Minamoto International. So now, what country is the most vulnerable for a big earthquake disaster?
It's an interesting question. There are I would say any country which is next to an earthquake fault or has an earthquake fault and is densely populated is most vulnerable. Countries, heavily populated countries like India, Bangladesh, China, Turkey, US, Japan, they are very vulnerable to damage and loss of life from an earthquake. There might be an earthquake which happens in the middle of somewhere where there's not a lot of people. That wouldn't cause a lot of damage. But wherever there's built civilization and there are people, that's where the most damage is expected.
And now this is perhaps one of the biggest natural disasters we've had in the past decade. Why are we not hearing more coverage on this? Why is this not well publicized here in the States?
It's got to do with the media cycle. It's whoever picks up the story and thinks the story is worth sharing. Those are the people who share it. I mean, there's almost 50,000 loss of life, which to me is a huge number. And just so it doesn't happen to be, we live in the U.S., so if it doesn't happen to be in the U.S., it's not as much publicized in the U.S., and people have an appetite for only so long for a story, and then the media has to move on. Perhaps that's the reason it's not that publicized. However, people who are on the ground living day in, day out, they have to live with the consequences. And for them, it's not a short media cycle. It's a long recovery process. And we here at Miyamoto are actually helping with the recovery process after this huge disaster. Our teams are doing evaluations of the houses that currently stand to ensure that those houses, either they are green tagged, as in they're safe to get in, or they're yellow tagged, they have minor damage and only a few things need to be done, or they're red tagged, don't go in the house. So we are doing these assessments so people can actually, instead of living in the shelters, can go back into their houses.
What is the most expensive natural disaster in history, and how does this Turkey earthquake compare and rank against it?
Well, there are a few. When it comes to disasters, the most expensive one, I would say, was Chernobyl, but it wasn't a natural disaster. Now, if you look in terms of number of people, it was the 2004 tsunami and in Indonesia, India. And then if you just want to compare the cost, that was the 2011 Japan earthquake followed by a tsunami. And I think cost is not a fair question to me, because each country calculates cost differently. For developed countries like US and Japan, the cost of infrastructure is higher. There's a lot more to be lost. However, let's say, for example, Turkey, the estimated cost of the disaster is $84 billion is what is being estimated right now, which has ended up in 50,000 loss of life. However, in Japan, the cost was $360 million, and there were only like about 20,000 lives lost. So to me, cost is not a good number. To me, the disaster should be actually weighed in terms of the infrastructure lost and the loss of life. In terms of that, I would say the Aceh tsunami and the Indian Ocean tsunami was a bigger disaster than the Japan 2011 earthquake. I mean, they're all disastrous, but in terms of loss of life, that was much bigger.
How will Turkey rebuild itself now when they are already facing surging inflation and a shrinking economy and a huge mountain of debt?
Yeah, and I'm not an economist, I'm not a diplomat, so I wouldn't have a very pointed answer, but to me, the international community has to come in and help. Turkey has to be willing to accept aid from bilateral and multinational agencies such as UNESCO, UN, USAID, JICA, and all these agencies. They can come in and provide support to help evaluate and rebuild. Maybe they can prioritize infrastructure, spending on infrastructure in such locations. And that eventually may generate jobs and help the economy.
Syria was also affected by the earthquake, and yet outreach to Syria was less enthusiastic because of the Western sanctions on the country. What do you make of this? Do you think humanitarian aid during these times of crisis should trump sanctions or no?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, sanctions are political. Human life is human life. Your life and my life has the same value. Just because my country has sanctions on it, that doesn't mean that my life is less valuable or it's not worth saving. All human beings are the same. We should extend the courtesy and the relief effort to the same magnitude. If we're doing one in Turkey, we should do the same in Syria. And of course, I'm talking from a human and engineering perspective. I'm not talking from a political perspective. But to me, yes, we should support Syria as much as we can.
Thank you so much, Dipanj Katharia, but please stick around. Dipanj will be joining us right after the break. And when we come back, the cost of natural disasters vary considerably depending on where they occur. The economic impact is worst in poorer countries since the long-term effects last longer. We'll have more after the break.
Волынь – это особая территория на Украине. Территория, все время находящаяся так или иначе под контролем противоборствующих сил. К 1939 году поляки составляли примерно 15-20% населения Волыни.
Когда был атак на Союз Советский, в том же атаку również брали уже два батальона украинских националистов.
Морды массовые, подчас которых ничтоно целое все Волынское, распочались в лютом 1943 года.
Они верили в то, что таким образом они движутся к созданию украинского государства независимого, моноэтничного, такого, какое они хотели видеть.
Українських націоналістів, тобто донців опублікував, там же не завагався доконати жодної зброї на своєму противнику, якщо того хоче вимагав добру України. І це той же огромна позбу свою життєвісті мати.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact.
Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Которые тут есть, это брызги от своеобразной волны.
На сегодняшний день водохранилище сработано до мертвого объема, так называемого.
С водой у нас просто ужас.
Мне 70 лет, я уже не могу тягать вот эти баклажки.
Меня увидел бабушка, которая шла с пустыми баклажками. Я сказал папе, что когда вырасту, буду находить воду и развозить людям.
Я говорю, хорошо, сынок, завтра начнем, без проблем. Рекорд был 27 бочек.
Если сбой в подаче воды, то это угроза для жизни больного.
Pour couper l'eau à tout simplement la population du Донбасс.
Welcome back to The Cost of Everything. Now, the cost of disasters vary considerably depending on where they occur. When a large disaster occurs in a wealthy country, the financial damage may be quite large. However, when a comparable disaster occurs in a poorer country, the actual financial damage may appear to be relatively small, but the long-term effects will be longer lasting. For example, the 2004 Indian Ocean earthquake and tsunami had a death toll of around 230,000 people, but the cost of it was reportedly only $15 billion. In contrast, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, in which only 11 people died, the damages were sixfold that of India's. California also experienced a 7.9 magnitude quake in 1906, causing massive destruction and tsunamis, costing $500 million in damages, the equivalent of more than $13 billion today. Now in Japan, buildings that were sitting on a rubber foundation withstood the Great Hanshin earthquake, which killed more than 6,000 people. This technique, which is called base isolation, is used in roughly 9,000 structures in Japan today. Thousands of other buildings in the country have been fitted with shock-absorbing devices that can greatly reduce the damages and prevent collapse. 87% of all Tokyo's buildings have been constructed according to modern anti-seismic standards, and the Japanese government has spent $1 billion to build its world-famous seismic alert system that can detect the peak of a quake 80 seconds before it arrives. This is essential to give the people the necessary time to take urgent steps like shutting off gas, stepping away from windows. Chile, China, Italy, Mexico, and Peru have all adopted the techniques to varying degrees. Conventional buildings use concrete, so when there is an earthquake, the building will split apart and collapse. But with base isolation, the building will shake with the ground, so they may sustain some structural damage, but it will not split since the base is still intact and will just sway. Base isolators are like shock absorbers between the building and the ground motion, letting the building slide back and forth and having the vibrations travel up through the building. A base isolated building costs about 13 to 15% more than a conventional one. Other technologies in Japan include inflatable airbags that deploy underneath a wooden home when a large earthquake is detected. And newer buildings in Japan are also generally stronger and stiffer than American ones with so-called resilience movement technology. This is designed for the structure to better withstand earthquakes. Japan and the United States are two of the world's most technologically advanced countries who have responded very different ways when it comes to earthquake protection. Japan's government mandates that it builds stronger structures capable of withstanding earthquakes and being used immediately afterwards. This is also due to their much denser population. But the U.S., on the other hand, sets a minimum and less protective standard with the understanding that many buildings will be badly damaged, but that's what insurance is for. This way of building allows builders and contractors to spend less, maximizing their profit margin on the building, which is very in line with the U.S.'s capitalistic culture. The American approach has the risk calculation and assumption that a building will be used for 50 years before being torn down and replaced. In a severe earthquake, most American buildings are designed to crumple like a car in a head-on collision, dissipating the energy of the earthquake through damage with the goal of preserving lives. There is an estimated 175 base isolated buildings in the U.S., mainly museums, hospitals, and older buildings in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Notably, Apple's new headquarters in Silicon Valley has a sliding mechanism in the ground for earthquake protection. Nearly 700 support columns sit on top of steel pucks that sit on top of a massive steel saucer. When an earthquake hits, the pucks slide across the saucers as much as 4 feet. The net effect is that the ground jolts, but the building moves significantly less. And for more, let's bring in again Dipanj Katharia, principal at Minamoto International. Now, Dipanj, if the same earthquake that hit Turkey hit Japan or California, how much damage would you anticipate? Would there be the same number of lives lost?
The reason being that the buildings in California and the buildings in Japan are built designed and built to a better standard than the buildings that existed in Turkey at the time. The codes in US and Japan have been constantly being updated with better knowledge, and the buildings are built to better standards day in, day out. Like every 3 years, we have a new code, let's say in California, and there is an improvement in the code every 3 years. So the buildings are built to better standards. I don't believe the buildings in Turkey were built to the same standards that they were built in, you know, Turkey and just Turkey, for example. And if earthquakes don't kill people, infrastructure does. Right? The buildings do. So if we have better buildings, our buildings are going to fare much better. We design buildings for life safety. Life safety means you'll be able to leave the building if there's a big earthquake like this, and hopefully they won't collapse. That's what the codes are for. However, it's not 100% guaranteed. But most of the buildings are going to survive. People are going to get out. Some of them are going to collapse, especially buildings that were built in the 1970s or earlier, if they still exist. And if they haven't been fixed, they may collapse. And there may be some loss of life over there. But generally, to answer your question, there'll be very less loss of life. There might be monetary damage, way more monetary damage, but the loss of life will be less.
And how much will it cost Turkey to now rebuild its city? Would they have been better off investing in earthquake-proof technology in the first place?
Easy answer. They should have been investing. They have, actually. I mean, they improved their code in 2000. But their construction practices need to be improved. So there should be proper quality control in the field for building new buildings. Make sure that the buildings are done properly, their things are put together in a good way or the better way, the best way to resist earthquakes. And there should be standards implemented for construction. Now, there are buildings that are done, that were built before 2000. What do we do with those? In this earthquake, a lot of buildings have collapsed. However, the buildings that exist, there should be political will to go and retrofit those buildings to save lives. I wouldn't know the final number, what it would cost to rebuild, but from what I understand, the disaster is it's estimated about $84 billion at this time. So the cost to rebuild is going to be about the same. Out of that, about $60 billion is going to be for infrastructure and reconstruction, and the rest of the money is wages lost, people out of work and such.
Do you think earthquake safety standards should be federally mandated to save lives? Or do you think this is a decision for the builder and for the bottom profit line?
We think there should be the government is voted in by the people. And the people should decide if they want to live or work in a safe building or not. So if it's the will of the people, then that becomes a federal mandate. If it's not the will of the people, then, you know, the government can only push the agenda so much. However, the people like you and me have to vote the government in so they can enact an improvement to the existing conditions. Now, we could leave it to builders, but the builders usually, they don't own buildings for a long time. They build the building and sell it within 3 to 5 to 10 years. So they don't have it on their conscience that they own the building and their building may collapse. Unless the builder is required to hold the building for a long time, and during that time, whatever happens, it's upon them. However, I think it is a combination of both, the federal mandates and the builder's will. It has to be a combination of both.
Thank you so much, Deepansh Katharia, for joining us today. After the devastating 2010 Haiti earthquake, relief workers and international aid poured in to help the country. But that actually became a huge problem when there was a lack of coordination among the aid organizations. Many of the workers were inexperienced, and there were no rules and coordination between all of the parties, and that made it extremely difficult. While there are no real winners when a natural disaster strikes, at least we're all much better prepared this time around to provide aid. Over 102 countries had offered assistance, with at least 74 international rescue teams deployed. Turkey has also cultivated a reputation in being a global leader in humanitarian aid. So this time around, it enabled greater control over where deliveries go while fostering direct engagement with local and national authorities. And hopefully, going forwards, the community will learn their lessons and invest upfront in better construction standards that will not only save lives, but also cost less in the long run when the most unexpected happens. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.